Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I am your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. My guest is Heather Wickman, and we had an interview. It was actually about a month and a half ago now because, you know, I've got a backlog of interviews. So we spoke back in September, and Heather is a very interesting person in that she both works in the field of psychedelic therapy and plant medicine and also equine therapy with horses, but not at the same time. You'll get the chance to learn all about it in just a moment here after a few quick announcements. We'd like to thank James for making his monthly contribution in support of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast, and also Nick, who left a small tip for last week's episode. James and Nick, thank you very much for your support. If you would like to support this podcast, which of course is 100% listener supported, you can stop by my personal webpage at martinball.net and use the PayPal link at the top right of the page, or become a monthly supporter over at my Patreon page, which you can also link to at martinball.net, or just go to patreon.com/martinwball and sign up for the level that is most comfortable for you with the benefits and gifts that you would like to receive. Also, I'm happy to announce that I have finished the quote-unquote soundtrack album that I have been working on for the audiobook of the Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT Anthology. That album is available over at my Bandcamp page, which is martinball.bandcamp.com, and it's called The Pure Energy of Unconditional Love, and it is currently going through the global distribution process, so it will show up on my Spotify, YouTube Music, Apple Music, what are the other ones? Amazon Music pages in the coming weeks, but for right now, it's just over at martinball.bandcamp.com. And that means that I can start integrating the music into the recorded spoken parts for the Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT Anthology. So that means I'm going to be getting to work on finalizing the audiobook, which is my 11th audiobook, this week. So I'm very excited about that. And so the audiobook for Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT will be coming out very soon. And it will join my other audiobooks that are available over at Audible, Amazon, iBookstore, etc., etc. Well, let's go ahead and get into it with Heather. This is Heather Wickman, and also you can find out more, particularly about her equine therapy, at beuntethered.co. So let's get into it with Heather Wickman. All right. Well, then let's go ahead and get started. I'd like to welcome on to the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast for this week is Heather Wickman. And Heather wears a few different hats. She's an author of the book, The Evolved Executive, The Future of Work is Love in Action. And I see by the book title there that she's got her PhD, so we're going to talk to her about that. She's also involved in equine therapy. That means working with horses, if you're not familiar with the term, and using that as a therapeutic tool. And also, which of course brings her to the podcast, is she is involved with plant medicine as well. So we're going to talk about all these different areas of Heather's work today. But first, let's just go ahead and welcome Heather to the podcast. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. So let's just start by getting to know you and get a little bit of your background. I'm always interested in talking with people, even starting with like childhood, like how you grew up. I mean, as anybody who's involved in plant medicines, it's always an interesting story of, well, how did you get into this? So we can go back as far into your personal life history as you like, but just kind of where do you come from? Tell us your story.
The story, it's like the hardest question, but I'm always kind of, you know, surprised how this small town Minnesota kid who had a really kind of narrow perspective on what she wanted in life turned out to be kind of a corporate climber and then an accidental psychonaut and then end up working with my clients with horses and sacred plant medicine. So it's been quite a wild ride, but I did grow up in Minnesota in a very small town. So we're talking like, you know, small town of 500.
That is small. Yeah.
It is tiny, tiny. And I had no idea of the world that I'm in right now. So even, I don't know, even 10 years ago, if you told me this is what I was going to be doing, I would have said, you know, you're absolutely on crack. Like, that's it's not even possible. But I ended up being really good at climbing kind of the corporate ladder and did that for many, many years until I wasn't, until I realized that I was kind of dying inside and kind of had what I call my corporate crack and ended up resigning from my corporate role. My husband resigned from his corporate job. We sold everything. We spent 3 months in Thailand kind of doing the whole eat, pray, love. We got to figure out who we are and what we're supposed to be doing here in the world. And that's when we found plant medicine. And so that was probably 7 years ago and have been working with plant medicine ourselves ever since. And it's through plant medicine that I was reunited with the horses. And so I grew up with horses. My horse, Zephyr, he passed away when I was 22. And a part of me died with him, a part of me that, and I had him since I was 8. I just couldn't grieve it. I couldn't grasp the depths of that loss at that point and didn't touch a horse for a decade and was in a plant medicine retreat. And it became very obvious, or in a ceremony became very obvious, that horses are a huge part of why I'm here and my work here. And so that sent me on a whole new adventure of doing an apprenticeship in equine facilitated coaching, establishing our own herd and our own ranch. And today we help entrepreneurs and leaders kind of break through some of their biggest roadblocks to achieve the change that they want by working with plant medicine and doing horse-guided integration.
Yeah. So using your own life experience, I mean, this is very common in the world of healers, right? Where there is, you've encountered your own crisis around similar issues, found your own way out, and then lending a helping hand to others to move through the same process. So there's a bunch of follow-up questions I want to ask you about all that. So,
good.
And actually, if you don't mind, first I just want to comment on your appearance. Of course, we just have audio that goes out on the podcast here, and it's, you know, I meet a lot of different people in this field, and one of the things that I'm immediately drawn to about you is that I like the fact that you don't look the part. And
I get that a lot.
Yeah, which is very refreshing. I'm kind of notorious for that as well. I mean, I'm a guy who wears t-shirts and shorts and pants, you know, but you know, a lot of people you see in the psychedelic medicine world, you know, they've got lots of tattoos and they've got beads and jewelry and feathers and, you know, really looking the part. And it's always something that's turned me off a little bit about, you know, trying to play a role in some sense. But I'm refreshed by you're wearing like a knitted hoodie sweater. You know, you've got your nice loop earrings and, you know, you're definitely not someone that anyone would ever look at and say, oh yeah, she's into plant medicines.
Yeah, not even a little bit.
Yeah. So I do want to talk about your entry into plant medicines yourself. And even there, that it's kind of, it's not an unsurprising turn of events at this day and age, you know, where we live at a very interesting time where people who were never involved with plant medicines are getting involved in it now. And particularly people who, you know, are going through like a big life change. And it seems like, whereas before this was very taboo and is very countercultural and underground, now it's something that's much more accessible to a lot more people. Like, okay, well, I'll give that a try because I'm going through a big change and I don't know what's coming next and maybe this will help. So I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit more. I want to get into that, but if tell us a little bit more about your PhD and then also the corporate work, you know, for... I'm sure many of my listeners are not on the corporate side of things. I've never really been on the corporate side of things. Well, just a little bit. I taught at an English language school and was an executive or a director there. And it was a corporate school and is not my vibe at all. But a lot of my listeners are on the outside of the corporate world. So maybe just share a little bit more, if you're open to it, about your PhD, what that was in, and then what it's like in, you said, climbing that corporate ladder and really deciding that it wasn't for you.
Yeah. And I'll reiterate kind of going into this story that that was my mindset. Like, that's what I knew as success as a little girl. Like, you grow up and, you know, you go to school and you become a banker or you become a teacher. And then you do the suburban life with three kids, picket fence, all those kind of things. And that was kind of what I thought my life was going to be. So I hit the corporate climb really hard. I'm kind of that type A personality for sure. And did my undergrad and graduate degree back to back, took a few years off and dove right into my PhD. So I finished that up by the time that I was 32. And I don't say that to be like pat you on the back, but more like when you're just so driven and blinded by your actual reality, like your authentic reality, it can be kind of a disaster. So I did my PhD in leading transformational change. And so internal within organizations, I was a coach, an executive coach for physicians, for leaders, entrepreneurs, executives at that point. And so I've had this common thread throughout my entire career of, you know, helping others do things different or move through change or try different things. And it was an incredible experience. It's a different conversation if I would do it again. But I'm glad today that I did because it provides me what I need to do what I'm doing right now. But the corporate world was a good fit until it really became obvious it wasn't. And so it fit that model of my mind at the time in terms of stability, security. You know, you've got this career climb, this career trajectory. And then I think I just got enough exposure to worlds outside of my own through travel and different people that there was this nagging thing of like, oh, I don't really fit in here. Like, there's so much toxicity in this corporate world around greed and command and control and all of these type of things that I saw so much suffering around in myself and my colleagues and my bosses. And it kind of reached a point where I was offered what I thought would be my dream job. And I was, everyone around me was so excited. And I was just so like heartbroken. And we were moving out to California because I was going to take the job. And I called my husband. I was already out there. I'm like, you know, babe, I'm resigning today. Like, I can't do this. And so that's kind of what set everything in motion in terms of a big shift in my life and our lives. So the PhD, leading transformational change, it was in an organizational context, but it's all about transpersonal psychology. And so it lands very well in terms of the integration work we're doing now.
Yeah. And just what you shared there, that's really one of the defining features for a lot of people, again, who do come to plant medicine at a time of transformation, of really sort of realizing the misalignment between the environment that they're in and what they're doing and what they're really feeling inside. Yeah. And, you know, I just want to applaud you for making that change, because I think that it's a really hard one for a lot of people, especially when you're trading something like, it sounds like you're probably very financially secure. The whole career trajectory is probably pretty much mapped out for you, but to really listen to yourself and you're like, you know what, this really isn't working for me. That's a place that a lot of people maybe don't get to, or when they do get to it, they might be like, oh man, I wish I made this decision a lot earlier. But it's a hard transition to really step into a different life, isn't it?
It's brutal. I mean, those first 3 months were terrifying because you go through kind of your own identity crisis in that scenario, and then you throw plant medicine on it down the road. It's intense. You know, you're no longer needed. You know, you're not attached to your phone. Like, oh my God, I've got, you know, 17 meetings I have to go to today. It's just an entirely different orientation to how you live and where you find value and how you view yourself. And it can be really daunting. I work with a lot of folks who, you know, are kind of teetering on that cliff's edge. And some, you know, take the step to jump over, and some are like, nah, I'm going to push that away. I'm going to tolerate this, how I feel, this kind of incongruence, and, you know, I'll be good with it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's great that you sort of emphasize here the difficulty and the scary nature of implementing a big change like that, because I think it's something that a lot of people maybe don't really appreciate how terrifying that can be to make a big change and how disruptive it is to your sense of identity and your sense of purpose. That, I think we might have a romantic notion of, okay, well, I'm in this life and I've decided I don't like it, so I'm going to change it. And then all of a sudden, I mean, there's especially, in psychedelic circles, people talk about, oh, well, just raise your vibration and then everything, all the abundance will start to come to you and everything will be in flow. And they're kind of overlooking the fact that transition is really fucking hard. And completely
Is.
changing your identity is not easy, and it can be terrifying and incredibly confusing. And it's not just like, oh, everything just suddenly falls into place, and life is what it was always meant to be.
It's just love and light. Just love and light. Yeah, no, it's been a much different experience for me than that, for sure.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think it's an important note to make about these kinds of changes. And that also is what probably gives you the skill to help others navigate through it and give them the courage and perseverance to, it's hard, but it is fruitful. It is
It
fruitful when you
is.
get to the other side, but it's not
It
necessarily
is.
going to be easy. And it's not like all your problems are snap, they just go away.
Yeah, no, it's a matter of choices, right? In trade-offs, you're trading off one life for a different life, and it's not necessarily one's easier, one's harder, but one's definitely more aligned. And so I find a lot of solace. I don't think you could pay me to go back to the other world, to my other life at this point. Yeah.
Well, that's great. Great. So let's, you're welcome to share what you're comfortable sharing, or if you're not, that's also fine as well. But I'm very curious about what that first experience of plant medicine was like for you, and also making the decision. I mean, so for example, I help people integrate their experiences. And one of the questions that I ask them always is, well, when you heard about that, what made you say, yeah, I want to do that thing I've never done before, but something is calling to me there. So I'm asking you the same question.
Yeah, it's a good question. So as context, like I didn't experiment with drugs through college, through my 20s, anything like that. And I grew up with frankly a brother who did that, and I got to learn through him kind of the really hard knocks that drugs bring into our life. And at the time, I was working with a coach to try to help me navigate this really big transition. And during one session, she looked at me and she's like, "Oh my God, you're my ayahuasca girl." And I said, "I'm your what?" Like, this Minnesota kid, I'm like, "I'm your what?" I had never heard of it, right? I'm like, "So what's ayahuasca?" And she begins to try to explain it. It's a plant medicine, it's a tea, and it helps you uncover all these parts of yourself. And I'm a social scientist by academic training, so my mind is like my worst enemy at this point. And so like I go home and I Google what is ayahuasca, right? And that's like the worst thing you could ever do. But something over the course of the next few weeks really kind of settled within me of like, well, maybe this is something that I need to at least look at, because initially I was scared to death. And we were down in Mexico at the time, and I started Googling a little bit, like retreats, and I ended up running across an individual who runs retreats right where we were at. And her name is Sharon. And just so happened, she's like, "Hey, why don't I just pop over? You're just a couple towns down." So she came over to our little villa and we spent like the afternoon together. And she really helped me understand what it's all about. And long story short, I was at her retreat the next month. Both my husband and I were at her retreat the next month, where we sat with the medicine for three ceremonies over the course of 7 days. This is the next part of the story, is probably not one you maybe heard as many times, but the first two times that I sat with ayahuasca, nothing happened. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I sat there all night, experiencing everyone else's journey. You see them move through different things and you hear them move through different things. No purging, no nothing, nothing. And so I was so upset and I was so disappointed in myself. I was just like, there's something wrong with me. Like, why can't I do that? Everyone else can do this. you know, and I worked with Sharon around just the density of my mind. And I listened to one of your podcasts, like some egos are just really have a hard time surrendering into the medicine. And at that point, I definitely had one of those egos. And after I beat myself up for a good 5 days of how much I sucked and how much this wasn't for me and all that kind of stuff, the ayahuasquero, the gentleman who serves medicine, you guys know that, said, you know, Heather, in this great accent, he's like, you have to pretend to go to sleep. And more often than not, they tell people, stay up, you know, stay seated. And he's like, I need you to pretend like you're going to go to sleep right after you drink the tea. And so that's what I did. Like I took the medicine and I laid down and I was like, okay, Heather, you can just go to sleep for the next 7 hours. And that's how I got into the medicine and had my first experience. And it was a little rough. I mean, it wasn't a super pleasant, everything's bliss. And oh my God, I saw how I'm connected to everything in the world. But it was enough to give me the kick in the butt that says, wow, this is actually something that I need in my life. And it's a practice that can help me evolve to be the person I want to be.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing those details. And it's actually not all that uncommon. You know, part of it is selective again, that, you know, when I'm consulting with people, it's also people who are, they've encountered something that they're having difficulty understanding or integrating in some way. And sometimes that is, the first couple times I went, it was a dud, like nothing happened. And people want to know what's wrong with me. And just what you're describing is pretty much what everybody does, is it becomes another layer of then self-criticism and critique, which ultimately makes them even more rigid in whatever structure they've been in. And so it's just beautiful advice of, well, just treat it as though you're going to sleep. And that's actually advice that I've given to people as well. Like, just let yourself drift away and then see what happens. But it also reveals just how very powerful the mind is. And of course, it's not a criticism of anyone for having a powerful mind. I mean, it's a great thing to have a powerful mind. But it can get in the way, but it's not a reason to beat yourself up. And hopefully you learned a little self-love and compassion through all of that.
I have. It's been a journey, but I definitely have.
Yeah. And again, you don't need to share anything if you don't want to, but I'm curious if there's anything you'd want to share for how it went for your husband was that his first introduction as well? I'm just curious.
No, it's a great question. That was his first introduction as well. And he and I are yin and yang. So if you get a sense of me in any way, you can suspect he's the opposite. So he had a very vivid three ceremonies, the first three ceremonies, but to almost the extreme opposite, where he fought the medicine and where I fought the medicine so much in my mind, where I didn't allow myself to go in. He almost fought it on the other end of like, I'm so out of control, I need to get out of this. Yeah. And so the first night he had a full-on brawl with his purge bucket. And so it sounds a little terrible, but, you know, purging is a natural part of some of these medicine journeys. And he was convinced that he needed to get everything out. And so he was literally having a shit show with his purge bucket and tried to get everything in his entire lifetime out in one sitting.
Yeah.
And that didn't work real well for him, because we found out he never purges. He never once purged, and I don't think he ever has since purged. The second ceremony, he experienced that death that a lot of us experience, and he experienced both of us passing, and he was convinced that these people, the people we were in ceremony with, were here to help us pass in the literal world.
Yeah.
And we didn't understand at that point the metaphorical elements of so many of these journeys. And he ran. So he escaped our Mexican retreat center. He climbed a rock wall and he went out into the jungle and was like, I'm not doing this anymore. My wife's dead. I'm dying. So fuck it. We're done. And he came back and, well, they went out and found him, thank God. And he was like, I'm not touching this stuff ever again in my life. This is, you know, this is the worst thing that anyone could ever do. And the ayahuasquero and him had become pretty good friends. And he knew that Colby was struggling with the diet. And he was like, I'll give you a cheeseburger if you do the last ceremony with us. Yeah. And so he promised him a cheeseburger after the ceremony. And he was like, oh, fine, I'll do it. And that was Colby's big breakthrough. He sat with himself in the midst of feeling completely out of control and had just kind of this massive reconnection with who he was as kind of an essence coming into this world. And I don't want to butcher his story, so I'll leave it at that. But it was just kind of one of his most heart-centering, heart-opening experiences I think he's ever had.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And please extend my thanks to your husband for you sharing that with us here on the podcast. And this is just another fantastic example. Another bit of advice that I always give people is like, if you're in a partnership, mm-hmm. you know, you're in a close romantic relationship, whether it's marriage or, you know, whatever your configuration is, if both halves of the partnership want to do this work, then it's great. But it should never be, well, I'm going to do it, so I want you to do it. Like, you should never be talking your partner into it. And then when you do it, it gives you both a frame of reference where you can converse about it. I said, but I always say, don't expect that your experience is going to be anything at all like your partner's, because you're both unique individuals and your trajectory through your medicine experience are going to be completely different. So you'll have a common ground to talk about, you know, the ceremony, the medicine, what you went through, but don't expect it to be the same. And this is just a beautiful example of that and how we all have our own tendencies, our own blocks, our own methods of surrender, and it's going to be totally different for everyone. And I just love the hamburger. Just because sometimes you do need a little incentive of you know, you can treat yourself to that. And it reminds me of long ago when I was facilitating 5-MeO. This is a long time ago now. This is pretty early on. This woman came and she had been a vegetarian for like 30 years or something like that. And after her 5-MeO experience, she's like, you know what? I think I just want a hamburger and a milkshake. And I said, you know, you can treat yourself to that. And then she went to a local diner. I told her where she could find one, but it is what she wanted. And it's important to recognize those things and be able to reward ourselves.
For sure. Oh my God. It's hard work. It is. Yeah. The surrender.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at that point, I mean, you could have said, all right, well, that was great. What's next? But it sounds like you continued then to investigate the area of plant medicine and personal growth. I mean, I'm assuming that wasn't the end, since now you're working in this area. So
exactly.
How did it evolve beyond that first introduction?
Yeah, we, I don't know, something switched within us, and we built a really beautiful relationship with Sharon and the retreat group that we had initially worked with and felt safe there, which I think is such a huge element of this all. And so ended up going back, man, 5 or 6 times over the first 2 years. And then we expanded into a few different medicines. And this was, you know, for our growth and our evolution of this kind of new path that we were creating. And it just kind of evolved in strange ways where people are like, well, what's going on with you? Like, something is not the same.
Yeah.
And I want some. What is it? And that's kind of how things began to evolve in terms of, my goodness, how I would have never imagined we'd be working in this space. But it's something that I feel very grateful to be so.
Yeah. And I mean, this is just great talking to you, because it's like you're bringing up like all these key points. And that's another one that I like to share with people, is that when you get into it, you don't need to go push it on anybody else. But if you are really making progress in your self-discovery and you're blossoming into your more authentic self, I always tell people, other people will notice that. And then when they ask you, that's the time. to share, but not, hey, I did this amazing medicine retreat and I want you to go do it too. And here's why it's so important, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. I mean, we've seen a lot of that. And then so many people get so pushed away. And, you know, initially we were to the point of talking people out of it. Like, I don't know if you really want to do it. especially me. I'm like, oh my God, it's been a really lot of work. Are you sure you want to do this? And, you know, that tends to be like, well, then I really want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So there's some strange reverse psychology happening in that space when we try to talk people out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have kids?
We have no human kids. We have 8 fur babies. So 4 horses, 2 dogs, and 2 cats.
Okay. Okay. Because I was just going to ask you, because that's always an interesting question as well. Is like, well, what do the kids think when mom and dad go do this? All right. Well, let's talk about the furry kids then.
Yeah.
So we've already mentioned that you do equine therapy, but let's get into talking about that now. Like, what is it? I don't think I've, I mean, obviously I know what horses are. I know they're great, but I don't think I've ever talked to anybody about equine therapy. I've heard about it before, but I personally don't really know any details. So let's get into that.
Yeah. So because I'm not a therapist, I try not to call it equine therapy. So I call it course guided integration, just so that no one is confused about what I'm actually supporting people with.
Yeah. Very reasonable.
Yeah. So this kind of goes back to one of my plant experiences. So sitting with ayahuasca, I was, once I understood how to be with the medicine a little bit better and ride the waves of the medicine, at one point I was surrounded by 12 horses around the Maloka, and I was just in awe of this experience. And all I kept on hearing and kind of hearing through my body was, you have horse medicine, you have horse medicine, you have horse medicine. And this was almost the entire ceremony. And I kept on asking, what's horse medicine? Like, what is it? What do I have to do? Da, 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 da. And they gave me nothing other than, you have horse medicine. And so I'm so confused. And so as a kid, I thought maybe I wanted to be a vet. So I was like, well, maybe I'm supposed to be a vet now.
Yeah. Horse medicine. That's right.
Yeah. And, but I couldn't be a vet because I just couldn't be a vet. And so I got home and Googled horse medicine and found some Native American passages around using horses as healers, shamans, guides, mentors, teachers, and something hit me in my body again. If I was still so focused on my brain, I would have missed it. But there was this resonance in my body that just said, oh my God, how did I miss this? Like that, yeah, that kind of mic drop moment. And that led me to do an apprenticeship for a year and a half working with equine facilitated coaching, and then have trained with some other folks. But I actually kind of stumbled across this idea as horses as integration partners because of my own work, and then having close friends come to our place and work with me and the horses who were kind of working through big plant medicine experiences. And so I probably do this work much different than most equine therapists, but horses have just this incredible ability to kind of help us see through all the nonsense. And so, and get us out of our minds, which I think was my biggest challenge, because you're, you know, maybe in a round pen with, you know, 1500 pound animal, almost instinctually you drop into your body from a safety perspective and your mind kind of goes a little bit on the back burner. And so what we found is that these horses have an incredible ability to help people unwind and make sense of what their medicine journeys were all about in the horse-human connection. I mean, I'm doing a little bit of guiding, a little bit of prompting, but there's something that happens in the communion between the horse and the human that is a little bit unexplainable if you haven't experienced it. It's almost like two nervous systems begin to interact. Intuitions begin to interact. Horses will actually take you on similar journeys as plants. If you can really drop into the body and be with the horse in where they want to take you. And so those are just a few snippets, and I'll let you kind of ask some questions from there in terms of the ways in which we found horses to be just incredible partners for folks looking to make sense of their journeys.
Yeah, well, this all sounds very interesting. So I've never spent a lot of time around horses. I've ridden horses a few times. I was standing on a fence once when I was a kid, and my knee was sticking through, and the horse came up, and I thought I was being friendly, but then it bit my knee and scared me, and I fell off the fence. So I haven't had a lot of interaction with horses, so I'm not really familiar with kind of their personality structure as animals, but it sounds like that there's something important about how they relate, and also just their size, their presence, that, you know, we could be, you know, we could be stomped by them, we could be kicked by them, we could be knocked down. I'm wondering if either you have a personal experience or one that's been related by a client that could maybe demonstrate a little bit of sort of what people go through, or how they experience this connection. And as you say, that the horses can lead you on a journey. You know, it's a little bit abstract for me, again, because I don't know a lot about horse behavior or personality. Yeah. So I wonder if you could flesh that out a little bit, if that's possible.
So for sure, I'm going to start with the fact that horses are hypervigilant prey animals. And so I didn't think of that even growing up with horses, but they are constantly scanning their environment for threats, for safety, for harmony. And so they are hyper vigilant in their bodies and in their sensations. And that's where they live. They live from the felt perception of their bodies and their hearts. And so they have this incredible ability to mirror and magnify what's happening within our emotional system and our nervous system, even when we are not conscious of it. Mm. And so an example of, you know, I can put a client in a round pen. So a round pen's just a large, you know, structure where there's plenty of room to move. And, you know, the person goes in and they're like, you know, I feel good, I'm excited, da, 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 da. But they're actually afraid. Like, humans are notorious of these masks. Like, we tell one thing, but we feel a totally different thing. And the horse is actually going to mirror what you feel. So you can lie to me and say you're excited and da, 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 and confident and brave. But the horse is actually going to tell me what you're feeling underneath the surface. And so as that client steps into the round pen, if you're scared, that horse is likely going to either create distance, it's going to get agitated, it's going to pin its ears, it's going to do something that detects, I'm not safe here. And so in those moments, it helps clients understand actually how do they feel. And more often than not, you know, we've kind of shut off that feeling part of us. And so horses can begin to reawaken the felt sense of our bodies. The intuition, the knowing, by just seeing how these horses interact with you. So that's kind of an example. The journey experience is wild. In my training, I worked with a Mustang, a black Mustang, and his name is Corazon. And having worked with plant medicine, I have some ability now to work in that intangible spaces where, you know, I can kind of sense things and have a little bit more guidance with my clairaudience and clairsentience, all those kind of things. And as I walked up to this horse, my felt knowing was like, he's like, oh my God, I'm so excited to see you. And in that moment, I just busted into tears. And I'm not a super emotive person to begin with. And, you know, an onslaught of tears in front of all of my peers was just something I was totally embarrassed by. But this Mustang hadn't been domesticated for all that long, so still had very much of its wild feel. And I got into this round pen and I was like, I am scared to death of you right now. Like, I am scared. Like, all of my being is shaking, scared to death. And this Mustang comes up to me and just stands in my face, and I could feel its breath. And it was in that moment that I recognized that congruence, authenticity is what matters to the horse. And it's what ultimately matters for us as well. And that horse was reflecting my truth. I just said out loud, I'm scared to death of you, you know? And we stood just side by side for probably a half an hour. And that horse dropped its head and its bottom lip began to quiver a little bit, which what I knew in that moment is this horse was taking me on a bit of a journey. And I know that sounds crazy. But when I dropped in, closed my eyes and just felt into my body, man, he took me way back to a womb experience that I had never touched on in my entire life, nor in any plant medicine experience, and helped me see, one of the big challenges of my life around fully being seen and maybe where that came from in the first place. And so that profoundly affected my life in terms of the abilities of these horses from a healing and shamanic perspective. If we can drop in and just be fully authentic and just be in the present moment with them.
Wow. So it sounds a little bit like the fact that the horse, I've just seen a lot of different layers here. For one, it's a herd animal, so it's constantly relating to the input of the others in the herd. And as you say, it's a prey animal, so it has a certain sense of vigilance about it. And in that, it's very attuned to how another being is approaching it, because it's probably going to be thinking about what's the impact of this on the herd, or is this a threat? You know, what is the energy of this being that's approaching me here? And also the fact that the horse is powerful, and that in order to manage a relationship with a horse, that there has to be some kind of relationship there. It can't just be a domineering relationship, so that you have to kind of open yourself to that relationship. And then you're talking about, you know, really being in the body and getting in touch with your feelings. And I love the point that you make about how we wear these masks and, you know, we have the story that says, well, I'm this or I'm that. But just as you've shared that you get into the, you know, the arena with the horse and all of a sudden you're crying, that it has the ability to break through the mask into where you're authentically feeling. I'm curious with horse body language and, you know, people interacting with horses, do they need to be educated about horse body language and gestures to help them read how the horse is feeling? Or is that something within this context? Is it more of letting people discover that for themselves? I'm just wondering.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I like to have folks be able to discover that mostly themselves. Mm. There's going to be some safety elements that we do talk about up front in terms of, you know, what to be aware of if you're really in a situation where a horse is agitated, you know, how to keep yourself safe. But the beauty is when that human can begin to decipher what's happening in this relationship and, like you said, be a little bit vulnerable in terms of trying new things, trying different behaviors, dropping into your truth and seeing what actually happens. So we have folks really do more experimentation to see what they can gather in terms of their inner state and maybe what the horse is there to help them see potentially differently. And then they get to, in real time, try new things, you know, with a partner that has absolutely no judgment. So you get to drop into, you know, your vulnerable self, and there's no one there to judge you. A horse could care less. They just want you to be there anyways.
Do you think it helps that overall most people don't really have experience with horses these days? And if you went back 100 years, probably a lot of people would have a lot more experience with horses, you know, with horse and buggies and cowboys and all that. I'm imagining it might be helpful in the same sense, like in approaching ayahuasca, like you don't know what ayahuasca is. You've heard about it. Maybe you've seen it, but it's going to be a brand new meeting that first time you drink ayahuasca. And I think maybe the horses play a similar role that, you know, we no longer live in a rural agricultural society. We're in a post-industrial society or whatever we want to call it. So most of us don't have a lot of experience with horses. Do you think that plays a role, that it's both something somewhat familiar yet also still sort of foreign and sort of outside of our normal experience?
Yeah, I find that is absolutely the case with 90% of our clients, that they have zero horse experience. And because of that, they don't have the baggage that goes along with horse experience. And folks who have a lot of horse experience, maybe they're hunter jumpers, maybe they're dressage horse riders, whatever, tend to come into the relationship with a horse from a perspective of command and control. Mm. Like, like, I need you to do this because you're my hunter jumper horse. You're my dressage horse. You need to do this movement. You need to do this, where we're interacting with horses, like on a peer level, you know, they're teaching us, we're teaching them. We're in this kind of relationship that's much different. So I do find that it's helpful to not have a ton of horse experience. And oftentimes folks that do have a lot of horse experience are the ones who are like, yeah, that work isn't actually something that I have any interest in.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we see the same thing in the psychedelic world at times. People who have experience with psychedelics and assume they know what the next medicine is like.
Yeah.
And you know, like, oh, I already know that or whatever. So it's something about that freshness, you know, again, as you, someone approaching ayahuasca without any prior experience or prior expectations, you kind of encounter yourself in a different way. So now, there's something you want to say?
I was just going to say, I think there is a beauty, though, in the beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. You know, even as I continue to work with these horses, like, man, they teach me new things every day. If you can stay in that space of the, like, I don't know, I have no idea. Like, this relationship is brand new today. You know, what is it going to look like? And I find that true for my plant medicine experiences. Like, the more I do it, the less I know is kind of the perspective that I try to take working with the horses and the plants. And it just seems to keep me more open.
Yeah. So now, do I understand this correctly? You have a ranch in Colorado where you have horses?
Correct.
So how is life for these horses who are doing this work with people? How is life for these horses different than it would be for horses on an average ranch? Like, what do they get to do during their day? What are their activities and pastimes, and how are they acclimated to this process of working with people in a way that's different than dressage or, you know, we're going out galloping or whatever it may be that horses do these days.
Yeah. So first and foremost, we let the horses be horses. So, which means they get a lot of time to graze, a lot of time to play, and a lot of time to socialize. And that's really important because when horses are in their natural environment, they're able to kind of release energy and emotion really quickly and come back to their normal. And so when they're working with people and helping people move their energy, we need to make sure the horses can move their energy. But we ride these guys as well. I mean, just for trail rides and have good times with them, but we have a relationship with them and they get a lot of say in the relationship. And so we trust their knowing even in rides. If we're running into a situation where they are a dead no, we trust the horse. We're going to go a different way. And a lot of horse people would say, like, now you're just letting your horse get spoiled, right? Where we just have a perspective that these horses actually know probably more than us in many situations. So let's drop in and actually trust them several times. But, you know, right outside this door, the horses live. So we interact with the horses deeply and closely. They're part of our day-to-day. Our dogs play with them. The cats are with them. They're part of our family. And so they understand the work that we do here probably in a different way than a horse at an average ranch. Like, mm-hmm. we're asking them to be a horse. We want you to interact with us in the way in which you know best and not to be conditioned to, you know, move at the very step of a whip or whatever, those kind of things. So I guess long story short, we try to bring them back to their most natural state.
So are there ways that you, through all of this experience, are able to kind of read the horse's energy in the sense of this horse seems ready to work with somebody now, or maybe this horse doesn't, or even after engaging with a client, you know, like you mentioned, the horse is kind of getting their emotions and their energy out. Do they then behave in various ways that you can see, like, okay, this horse is offloading from the experience, and you know, again, kind of getting into the behavior and understanding sort of what their experience is from their side.
Right. So without working with horses, you know the right questions to ask. So we really let the horses guide the process. So the horses get to choose who they work with. And so they tend to gravitate towards people that have an energy that they know how to work with, or that they know that they have something to provide them, is the best way that I can frame that. Because you can put a client in the middle of the arena with four horses and have them begin to move around, and there's going to be one horse that comes to the center to stand with that horse or stand with that human. And so then it becomes really clear, okay, you're working with Adaliah or you're working with Gabe, whoever it is. And then we kind of allow the session to move forward, whether we're doing active work or reflective work or grooming work. And because I know these horses so well, I do know the nonverbals mm-hmm. really well. And so can help decipher a little bit some of the nuances for a client when they're working with a horse, if they aren't maybe witnessing it or experiencing it in the same way. And so, you know, a pin of the ears or a flish of the tail or, you know, moving back or moving close. Oftentimes we have this feeling of like we need to keep our safety bubble with horses. And I think that's true for a lot of the time, but horses also have a great ability for healing through touch. And so horses oftentimes will come to the top of your head or come to your heart. Mm. And what clients will say is like, I knew I had like a blockage or something was stuck there, or come to your throat or come to your womb. Mm. And so they oftentimes begin to like nudge at places that we need to pay attention to. And to your last question, it is fascinating. Horses will oftentimes roll or run out into the pasture and run and kick and be crazy for like 3 minutes after a session and then go right back to grazing at their kind of zero place. Wow. And so they do like shake it all off and move all the energy real quick, and then they're back to being a normal horse.
Wow. And of course, this is kind of what we've lost as human beings, in a sense, because of sort of the social masking and the need to get back to work or whatever, that we don't really allow ourselves those experiences. I mean, that's why so many people turn to plant medicines, is that they actually give themselves an opportunity like, okay, for the next 5 hours, I'm going to let myself go through whatever I need to go through. But often we don't do that. We try and buckle down, just get back in, but having those expressive periods, and also to give and receive touch, to have our attention drawn to different places of our body. Like, look, there's pain in there.
Right.
And sometimes we need that connection. And it sounds like what you're describing is that the horses have very different personalities and different ways that they want to interact with people. And it sounds like a big part of it is trusting that they're going to guide the way.
Absolutely. We've got one mare horse. She's beautiful and she's black, but she's very picky about the people that she works with. And then we have, you know, a couple of the boys that are like, you know, jokesters and like, you know, the overcompensating ego kind of horse, you know, so they pick people that are somewhat like them. It's the most fascinating thing.
Yeah. So interesting. How many horses do you have?
We have 4. And I'm sure we'll have a few more at some point, but that's about, I find that working in groups of 4 is really a nice size. And so we've kind of stuck with that for the time being.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about how this works sort of all in conjunction. So I noticed on your website, so I should mention that. I haven't mentioned it yet. It's beuntethered.co. C-O, that the medicine sessions are offered, at least what's on the website right now says in Portugal, and then your ranch is in Colorado with the horses. So when someone comes in and they're working with you, does this mean you guys are working together in Portugal and then they're making a trip to Colorado? Or is it usually part of a package together that you're doing both the plant medicine work and the horses, or are these two separate groups that sometimes overlap? I'm just wondering about the practicalities of that.
No, it's great. So we have 2 different ways you can do it. You can do kind of the full growth intensive, which would mean you're going to do a week with a sacred plant medicine, and then you're going to do a week with us here at the ranch over the course of 3 months. And Portugal and Mexico and Costa Rica are where we have partner sites where we work with the plant medicine. And then for folks who have already done a plant medicine experience similar to what you do, like that just need some help working with their insights and mm-hmm. what came from that experience, we do a 1-month experience just with the horses. So just where we do work with individuals after medicine, and now you get to come to the ranch and do the work with the horses for integration. So kind of 2 different packages, a 3-month and a 1-month, and the horses are horse only in the 1 month. If that makes sense.
Yeah. So it sounds like with the plant medicine side, that you yourself are not serving or not necessarily running the program there, but as you say, you have partners that you work with. So it's kind of like sending people to trusted facilitators and contacts that you know are fruitful for the work that you're doing.
Yeah. So trusted facilitators, folks that we've worked with and we trust deeply serving the medicine. We initially were going to do just one-on-one. So do a plant medicine retreat by yourself, but just found that the energy of that container wasn't really great. And so we do have them join a retreat that's already kind of scheduled with our partners. And those are usually every month, a couple times a month that they could jump into. And then we let them kind of get home, get their feet on the ground, have some initial experiences from their plant medicine ceremonies, and then come to the ranch here in Colorado and work with the horses.
And are you finding that people are coming with different questions or different issues from having worked with different plant medicines? And here, maybe you could even specify, like, in terms of where people are going, and is it mostly ayahuasca, or we're also talking ayahuasca, maybe Wachuma, or other things as well? Or
yeah, so it's ayahuasca, Wachuma, Bufo, psilocybin are the primary medicines. And, you know, I'm not finding that there's much, you know, specifics in terms of folks who do ayahuasca tend to come with this experience, or folks who have psilocybin come with this. It tends to be like, oh my gosh, like I saw a part of myself that I never knew. And so what impact is that going to take on my life now? Like, do I leave my job? Do I, you know, do a different relationship? Do I do all these different things? And, you know, we try to slow people down and kind of, okay, let's make some meaning of what you saw. And maybe it wasn't literal. Maybe it's metaphorical. And how do we kind of have an experience with the horses that helps you deepen that understanding and reconnect to it?
Yeah. When you were first kind of putting all this together and, you know, you started sharing with people, yeah, well, we want to do like work with horses and plant medicine. Were other people like, huh? Or was it, you know, I'm just curious how people, reacted to the idea, and I don't know if anybody else is doing anything like this. I mean, so my reaction, like when I got the email from Emma saying, hey, I've got Heather Wickman here who does work with horses and psychedelics, I was like, what? That's something I've never heard of before. And I told a few other people here locally, you know, who are in the plant medicine world, and they're like, huh? So
So absolutely. People are like, you are crazy. What are you doing? Because, you know, I had a successful corporate career and I was a, you know, an executive coach and, you know, people are like, what are you doing now? And to be really honest, like it's been a journey to come clean myself in terms of being able to speak widely about this is the work that we're doing, because I've had this fear of rejection, frankly, of, you know, what are my past clients going to think about me? What are my, you know, all of these family, friends, all these kind of things are going to be like, oh my God, Heather jumped off the deep end. And had to just come to terms with, they may have that reaction. And I guess their reaction is none of my business. And I need to follow what feels most true for myself. And so, you know, here I am with you talking about it, right? So let's get it out there.
Yeah. Have you done much public speaking about this before?
You know, not a ton of public speaking. You know, I do some podcasts, and referrals is our best and most beautiful way to gain clients, just because people then have a sense of what the work is and who we are. And so we haven't done, you know, big, bold marketing around this. And I don't know if that's ever going to be our path, but who knows? Yeah. Why do you ask?
Oh, I'm just always curious about, you know, because you mentioned about like the fear of rejection, and that's another big one for a lot of people, especially if they're stepping into this world, having not been a part of it previously, about what other people will think, what reactions will be, and, you know, where you find the courage to be open. And then some people, you know, they really want to practice underground. They don't want a lot of attention. Yeah. And it's not like I'm saying you're seeking attention or anything, but you know, just that ability to talk about it and share. Cause you know, it's an interesting topic, but it's such a little niche market of like horses and psychedelics.
And psychedelics.
Yeah.
And, I know. Yeah.
I think this is great, even not calling it therapy. Cause you know, like right now what's happening in Oregon is they're opening up this program around psilocybin assisted therapy or psilocybin experiences. And it's kind of a muddle over like what is a psilocybin assisted service? And even in not calling your work therapy, I imagine maybe it gives you a little bit more room to be creative and responsive because it does kind of put people in a box as soon as it's a therapist. Now we've got to, you know, answer to some board or oversight committee.
Well, and I have a huge perspective of integration versus healing. And maybe this is something that you would align to given your work, but like, I don't necessarily think that there's anything to be fixed, right? I'm not trying to go back and heal something, but I am looking to help others and myself continue to integrate these parts of ourselves that we have maybe pushed away for a long time and just to come back to wholeness. And that feels totally different than therapy. I've been in plenty of therapy in my life. And so it's got a different feel. It's got a creative feel. It's got a liberating feel. It's got a kind of a soulful feel to it versus the kind of, I would never call myself a healer, never in a, you know, never ever.
Yeah.
But I can help someone with integration for sure.
Yeah. I'm wondering, when did you commit to writing the book, The Evolved Executive? Where does that fit in the trajectory of all of these, these personal transformations and career choices?
Yeah. So the first edition came out like a year after my corporate crack. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to get out there. I didn't write anything about my plant medicine experience, anything about horses. It was kind of your leading from love versus leading from fear, which had been a lot of my experiences with plant medicine. Like, how do you return to love, self-love, compassion, all these kind of things. And just saw like I needed to bring that to the workforce because I experienced so much suffering there. And then redid the book the end of 2021 and brought in the plant medicine and brought in the equine medicine, the horse medicine as what I framed as growth hacks. So if you want accelerated change, these are a few things you can look at. But it took me 9 months to write the first book and like 2 years to write the second book. To like really like bring the courage and the authenticity to bring these things to like a business book. And so that came out late last year.
And how did that feel for you in kind of going in and reworking it into the second edition where obviously you are revealing much more at that point? And I think it's an interesting point because sometimes people don't share the medicine side of whatever their transformation was. And so then it could be surprising when somebody later learns like, oh, wait, this was all triggered by plant medicine experiences. And you know, you didn't have to do that. You didn't have to go and rework your book. So how did that feel for you once you did that?
Yeah. It was scary as hell when that book launched and be like, it's out there now, you know? And I did have, you know, some reactions to those close to me that are like, I can't support this, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, plant medicine is not in alignment with my religious or whatever views. And those were moments that were a little bit hard to swallow. And had friends, you know, you lose friends on this path as well.
Yeah.
And so that happened. What I can say is, you're seeing kind of the evolution of Heather, you know, 1.0, 2.0, as I put it in the book, but I put it in the book from an academic perspective, like what it's all about, like what is the research behind it? What are the findings from it? You're not going to find a ton of my personal stories in the book. And so it actually feels good to be having these conversations where I can share more of the experiences I've had that go along with some of the research that is in the book.
Yeah, and even in writing a book like that, I wouldn't say, oh, you've got to put all your personal stuff in there. But just the fact that you included this, I think, is a step into being really just more transparent about
right.
yourself and what really worked for you, and to give other people the courage. And, you know, this is, it's such an important aspect of going back to this idea of self-love, self-compassion, that this is what has transformed for you, and that in wanting to reveal these aspects of yourself, mm-hmm. even if it's coming from, okay, I'm going to make it academic in the book, it's still revealing for you.
Yeah.
And it's bringing you more into alignment with what really is your grounded reality. And this is another one of these points that I share with people, is that in you really being your authentic self is not necessarily going to win your friends over.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily going to make everything yeah. easier in your life, because other people will have their reactions to it and they will have their judgments. But if you are coming from a place of loving yourself, then you're willing to take the consequences of other people saying, whoa, I'm sorry, I can't support that. But if yeah. you know in your heart that you're in alignment and you're living from that place, you know that that's what actually matters more.
It's so true. I mean, the Four Agreements, that book, and the tenet that says don't take things personally has been so key to my transformation, to be able to step into this space and know it's my truth. It's my knowing of what I'm here to do, at least at this point in time. And yeah, other people's reaction is really none of my business.
Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
I'm curious if there's anything that you feel would be right to share about how your husband's, how his own journey has transformed since these early experiences with ayahuasca. And I mean, is he involved with the horses and the work that you're doing here, or has he taken another path and transformed in a different way?
Yeah, he I would say we're both continuing the evolution. And so his work does look different. So he works here with our clients and works with the horses as well. He works with us, some, like, the horses choose certain people to work with. Some people choose, you know, they'd rather work with Colby or they'd rather work with me, because we have much different approaches. Like, yeah. I'm going to walk with you. I'm going to hold your hand and we are going to get through this, where Colby's going to be really direct, tell you what you need in the moment and kind of sometimes smack you upside the head, you know, when you need to hear a different truth. And so people resonate with different parts of us. Colby's gift, which has really emerged, is, oh man, he creates beautiful spaces. And spaces, meaning physical spaces, but also the energetic signature that he can create within groups and within spaces is, oh my God, so important to this work. And so he's really stepped into that space, not only helping us here on our property, ensure that the space is really welcoming for people and it feels like home so that people can dive in and do the work that they want to do, but he creates a space of belonging. That's really easy for people to feel like they have the social support and the connection that they need to be able to continue to do the work.
Nice. So it sounds like yeah. you guys are really working in concert with each other.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a beautiful thing.
That's nice. And it sounds like it's probably pretty fulfilling for him as well.
Yeah. Similarly, like, we've designed a life that we both just love. So it's really hard to complain. And so we're pretty happy campers.
That's great. So I know you obviously work with a lot of people in leadership positions, entrepreneurs, executives, you know, people who kind of deal with money and power. And, you know, going back to the subtitle of your book, The Future of Work is Love in Action. So obviously you want to help people at the immediate level, as you say, work on their integration, gain their insights into their own personality structures and where they might transform and where they might be mm-hmm. more authentic, and kind of help them navigate all of that through the plant medicine and through the work with horses. But I would here invite you to be as grandiose as you might like in terms of what is that you hope would be the deeper impact at maybe a societal level. Like if you could talk about what would be ideal to change in corporate or executive culture or even entrepreneurial culture, where do you think that there's room for growth and more authentic expression?
Man, the thing that I find over and over again in my own work and with client work and with plant medicine work is self-love. And it's this thing that feels like a taboo, like soft, squishy topic that no one really wants to talk about because we can't really figure out what it means. But if that's the bigger impact that I wish we could have on the world, that would be it, is how do you find a space where you can let go of the lifetimes of judgment and let go of these ideas of who we think we need to be and just let it all soften to really honor, embrace who we are and be able to look in the mirror and say, like, Heather, I love you. Like, I love you exactly the way you are. That hasn't been a part of my life for all that many years. And, even for executives, entrepreneurs, leaders, CEOs, I think this is the missing piece. I really do, in terms of why we have so much dysfunction, is comes back to we act out in so many crazy ways because we can't find the love in ourselves. So it comes from insecurity, it comes from I need to command and control. And if we could step back and find a way to love ourselves a little bit more, I think we could love everyone else a little more.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement. For me, that is the fundamental issue is self-love
Oh, amen.
and finding the courage and permission to allow ourselves to experience that. 'Cause even there, it's such a huge egoic block for people. 'Cause it's
Oh,
like,
yeah.
isn't that egotistical for me to love myself? I mean, right there, we cut it off and say, no, I'm not supposed to do that. And then there's the deeper issues of not feeling worthy or, always looking outside for something. But it's just, it's the core human issue, in my opinion, is our ability to self-love and really authentically be in that place.
And I don't have it nailed every day, but moving in that direction as fast as I can.
Yeah. So as things continue to grow and develop with the psychedelic renaissance, do you think that this is something that is scalable, this work with horses and psychedelics? Is that something that you would like to see more people doing? Is this, would you ever see yourself in sort of a training or leadership position of let's get more people doing this, or any ambitions there?
I probably haven't thought that far down the road. I would love to see, man, everyone who's doing retreats have sound integration options, and I would love horses to be a part of that. And so the work that I can do to begin shedding some light on how horses can be phenomenal partners in that space, I feel really inspired to do. The scaling is always an interesting question because I don't have like huge desires to be like this monstrous scaled business. I've got a huge desire to help people and do good by our horses. And so I guess in whatever way that reveals itself is the way that I'm going to follow.
Okay, great. Any particular plans or anything coming up for you that you'd want to share with the audience?
Yeah, so if anyone's interested in diving into some of the horse integration, we do monthly, well, almost every month, retreats here in Colorado. And so they're 3 days with us with a month-long kind of coaching integration program afterwards. So definitely recommend that. And if there's folks that are kind of new to the psychedelic space that kind of want this comprehensive package of the plant medicine and the integration work, definitely reach out and we can kind of hook you up in terms of what medicine you're interested in.
And is it best for people to contact you through beuntethered.co?
Absolutely. That's the quickest and easiest way.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time and sharing of yourself and your heart and your own life and story, and of course your relationship with your husband and the horses. And I guess to wrap it up, I'd invite you to kind of just one more time, maybe just get back into a little bit of what is it about horses? Just kind of drill that back into the listener's audience mind of what makes them special in this work? Because we don't need to sell psychedelic self-discovery to the audience. Yeah. They know all about that. But if we could just give the horses one more shout out.
Yeah, I mean, I would say they are just one of the best authenticity detectors I think I've ever encountered, and the ability to bring you back to your authentic wholeness through your body's sensation, through your emotions, through your intuition, and kind of reconnecting you with your inner knowing. And so I think they have tremendous gifts to bring to us as we break open our minds into brand new possibilities.
Okay. Well, great, Heather. Thank you so much for your time today and sharing of all of your experience here. It's been a delight to get to know you and hear about this very interesting work with horses and psychedelics. It's awesome.
All right. Thank you so much.